And now, after years of planning, sweating, and going broke, here is the Boots and Whiskey Podcast with Jim Belisle.
And it left the media.
Why they would give this man a podcast is anyone's guess.
And there is what could only be a bizarre coincidence or something else.
Welcome to the Boots and Whiskey Podcast with Jim Belisle.
Trapped, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, sir.
Country music and fine moonshine.
You look like the vermin-ridden son of a bitch you are.
A podcast for everyone in the good old USA and all around the world.
Over there, send the word over there.
Quality booze and country music at its best.
So you're saying, can you set my country music award on fire?
The music, nice and loud.
What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly.
You can email the show at bootsandwhiskeypodcast@gmail.com. That's bootsandwhiskeypodcast@gmail.com.
It's just swimming with bow-legged women.
All social media can be found at Boots and Whiskey Podcast. The show is great, even if you're sober. Well,
my advice to you. Start drinking heavily.
Jim loves his music and his whiskey.
A real woman could stop you from drinking.
You have to be a real big woman.
This is the Boots and Whiskey Podcast with Jim Belisle. Great music, great booze, and fun. Even for you non-drinkers.
Y'all want to drink whiskey? I'd like a Coca-Cola in a clean glass.
Finally, a podcast that lets it all hang out.
Let's level with America.
Got your boots? Ready for some whiskey?
These boots are made for walking.
One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you.
And now, the Boots and Whiskey Podcast with Jim Belisle.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another special episode of the Boots and Whiskey Podcast. As we've talked about, this episode is special because it doesn't fit into a season. It's special because the conversations were just so intense and great that I felt these folks deserved I don't want to say more shine, because everybody has been important to this show, and I can't thank anybody more than my previous guests. But these few this month just came in at a time where the season was over. I didn't want to wait on them. And I didn't want to wait. I just didn't want to wait on them. These conversations were very interesting and very fascinating, and I think really personifies what season one of the Boots and Whiskey Podcast was. And it was a success. It really was. And these artists that I've had on, Ricky Duran at the beginning, Savannah Ray, Liam Coleman last week, and now I have Nick Casey. Another local New Englander from the great state of Rhode Island. And you're going to hear about that in that love affair that I have with Rhode Island in the conversation. But other than that, Nick Casey has a voice for country music. He personifies what I would consider classic, old school country music. He has that Josh Turner sound. He has that Waylon Jennings sound. He has that Johnny Cash sound. He has that rough and tumble, excuse the expression, man's man voice to country music. We'll talk about a lot of things here, right? You know, he just has that sound. And if you haven't listened to Nick Casey yet, he's been on our Spotify playlist, you're kind of missing out. Not kind of, you are missing out. Go check out Nick Casey. Because, especially for you locals, Nick Casey is not going to be a local forever. I guarantee you. The talent here is just too good to stay here, unless he wants to. He can do whatever he wants, right? But damn. So I probably hyped this up a lot. So he better deliver. And I know he's going to. I hope you guys all enjoyed as much as I enjoyed having the conversation with him. Before we get into it, thank you, Dirt Road Scholar Supply Company. Thank you, Rowdy Rhodes. Thank you, American Grit and Grace. Thank you all for listening to these shows and the feedback and the shares and the likes and the comments. Thank you all so much. Without further ado, it's my pleasure to present to you the last special episode before season two. Season two will start on Tuesday, February 1st, with a very special guest. You're not going to want to miss this conversation, excuse me. I promise you. You won't want to miss it. But without further ado, my conversation with Nick Casey.
My phone was having a moment.
That's all. We all do, you know. It's just that time of year.
You can hear me all right?
I can hear you great, man.
All right, good, because my AirPods also decided not to work last week, so.
Awesome.
Figure it all awesome. Out.
Yeah, so we're having the best time, yeah.
About time for a new phone, but we'll get there.
Yeah. So how's it going, man?
Good. Can't complain.
Awesome.
You know, keeping busy with a day job and singing, so.
Yeah.
How about you?
Yeah. Oh, you know, same. Well, minus the singing. Because nobody wants to hear that.
Yeah.
You know, it's been crazy. It's that time of year where, you know, for me, the day job was super busy up until about a week and a half ago. And then, you know, now it's going to be super slow until probably the beginning of March. And, you know, but that's the industry I'm in. So.
Yeah. I saw you at Luke Combs. Looked like a good time.
Yeah, Luke was great. You know, Luke's always great, though. You know, I haven't seen Luke and go, could have been better. You know, so it was good. Yeah.
I saw him back when When It Rains and Pours just got number one. He was at House of Blues. That was nice. A good show.
Yeah, I bet. I didn't get to see that show because when I looked into that show, it had been sold out for quite a while and tickets on StubHub were ridiculous. So,
right.
So I didn't get to that one, but every other one I've been to that I've, you know, he's been at has been great. You know,
awesome.
You know, he's Entertainer of the Year for a reason, I guess. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, definitely a good show.
Yeah. Yeah. So thanks for being here. First and foremost.
Yeah. You know, appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. I don't know how much of this whole connection you know about, you know, with me and you and all that, but this, for everybody else, this whole conversation has been a long time coming. And I don't know if you know that. but you were referred to me by, you know, actually a bunch of people that are in the Rhode Island circuit. And it was only a matter of time, and I'm psyched that we're able to do it.
Well, it was funny. I remember you messaged me on Instagram, and you're like, "When are we gonna get you on?" And I was like, "What? I didn't know if I asked you or you asked me how podcasts work. I've done plenty of radio interviews, but podcasts is the first one for me."
Oh, nice. Well, you know, what a better way to start. You know, I'm not gonna lie to you; it's all downhill from here, probably.
Perfect.
So the way I run this is, you know, this is all about you. You know, I want you to tell us who you are, what you're doing, you know, what your goals are. And as things come up and as the conversation goes, I'll interject with whatever comes up. So
sweet.
I'm going to turn it over to you. Go ahead, man.
Well, I'm a Rhode Island based country singer. I'm in West Greenwich, Rhode Island, which is more near Connecticut. I've been doing this since I was 16. I'm 24 now. And from my first show on, you know, that was I was hooked. You know, I was like, yeah, I think I want to do this for the rest of my life. So it's been pretty nonstop since I started. You know, luckily with how things were last year, this year was definitely our busiest year, which is awesome.
Yeah.
It felt like the first year for me where I felt like we were going in the right direction. So that was cool. I play, you know, a lot of more traditional music. Big into Johnny Cash and Waylon Jennings, all this it's kind of all the underground stuff. That kind of seems to where we fit in the best. And, yeah, I mean, just playing just about every weekend whenever I can.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And you have a full band, right?
I do. So I have my buddy Ryan Tremblay. He's my guitar player. Right? Ethan Lyons on the drums. Jared Knoyer on the bass. We had a fiddle player, Olivia Baxter, but she moved to Vermont. So playing with her has been a little more challenging right now. But we did the – things started picking up more once I got a band. So I realized that, which is – and it's just – it's way more fun with the band. I like solo shows, but my guitar player, he just blows me away whenever he rips a solo. So any chance I get to play with those guys is always the best.
Yeah, you know, that, and that's what I hear, you know, especially in the local scene where, you know, you're more apt to get, you know, bigger shows, better opportunities if you have a full band rather than just being by yourself or, you know, something along those lines.
Right. And we've been networking a lot more. That was something I learned to do during COVID because none of us were playing shows. So I reached out to, you know, artists around the area and we've just been helping each other out. Getting each other shows, playing at each other's shows, and just building each other's fan bases the best we can. And that, I think, that's more important than I realized to do, and it's just super beneficial in the long run.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. Now, with, you know, for what I'm doing and what I've been doing and people I've been talking to, you know, I know what the Boston country music scene's doing. You know, I'm a lot closer to you than that, but, you know, geographically. So talk to me a little bit about the Rhode Island country music scene and how that may or may not differ from, you know, other scenes in the area.
It's interesting. You know, I've done Boston a handful of times and I don't want to say it's not my crowd. I think we'll get back up there next year. Where I play in Rhode Island, it's a lot of, you know, in my area, at least, it's a lot of Swamp Yankees, farming, all that kind of stuff. And it's just some hardcore people, but they really like the old stuff, which is awesome. And it's you got to find the right places for sure, where people really want to listen to you. You know, a lot of times you're playing, you just kind of background music, which, you know, that's going to happen. But you know, we found the right venues, and just I feel like more people. Well, I want to say know me, which is kind of surprising in a way, like, or like people I don't know, they're like, oh, we're coming to your show this week or where, you know, so they're just pretty loyal fans, which is awesome. And, you know, they get pretty rowdy when yeah. the chance comes.
Yeah. You know, growing up, you know, I grew up in this area, right? Everything we did was in Rhode Island, everything, you know, because yep. it was just so close. It was more convenient to go to Scarborough Beach than to go to the Cape. You know right. what I mean? So everything was always done in Rhode Island. Living on the line, you know, it was just easier. And, you know, I think you're right, you know, where the people in Rhode Island are great. You know, they are very much, you know, they're a different, how do I say this without sounding offensive? They're a different class of people. You know, they have, you know, you have the city people, you have the, you know, the beach people, and then you have exactly what you said, you know, those Swamp Yankee, you know, farm life country people.
Right.
You know, and for such a small state, you know, it's crazy how you have so many different types of people.
Right. Like I used to work on a hay farm. I can go from the hay farm to the beach in 40 minutes. It's just, it's right. crazy how much the culture shifts in the different yeah. areas for being so small.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and it's funny because like once you get out of that, you know, once you go west of that, like 295-95 belt, like it's a whole different state.
Right.
You know, because you're right on the, you know, Eastern Connecticut line and, you know, that's a whole different world too. And, you know, but the music fits right for exactly what you're doing. It all fits.
Yeah. And I think, like I've found that more in a lot this year in Connecticut. It's similar, you know, similar layout, but like just playing down here, people are requesting obscure songs that I know, but I wouldn't expect it for the area.
Yeah. yeah, you know, it's a rough and tumble kind of place.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So when you started doing this, you know, we'll say professionally, what sparked that? How did you get into that aspect of it?
Well, it started, Bruce Springsteen is my guy. He's the guy I tell everyone. I literally picked up a guitar because I was watching a video of him performing live and I was like, I want to do that. And so I think I wanted to be a rock star for a long time. And then, probably when I was going into high school, I discovered Brad Paisley and Blake Shelton. Like, there was a certain point in country music for me around 2010, 2011, like everything on the radio that was coming out was just awesome. And yeah. I really enjoyed that music. And a friend of mine, I used to be in a duo with a buddy of mine named Ryan Cox. He's a teacher now, and with school and everything getting busy, life kind of got in the way of what we were doing. But he really turned me on to playing country music. And I think I just went down a rabbit hole, and like everything I found, I loved. So, and it just felt like just real, you know. I think that's the main thing. People connect to the music a lot. So writing that kind of music and performing it, I feel like connected with people the most. And I just, you know, I love the genre.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's one of those things. And I tell people all the time that what country music wasn't my cup of tea until about, you know, really 7-8 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I was a classic rock kind of guy, and, you know, jam bands are my thing in college because that was the big thing then. And, you know, it's interesting how country music has kind of, you know, exploded here in New England over the last decade or so.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's the same for me. Like, my mother, she's a folk singer, actually. And, you know, I followed her around. I was a kid. She was playing shows. And she loves Reba McEntire, Trisha Yearwood, all those people from the 90s. And my dad's a big rock and roll guy. So I got a pretty healthy mix of both those things growing up.
Yeah. Yeah. So for you, when you started playing music, how long did it take you till you started writing your own stuff?
Let's see. I started playing when I was 16. I think when I was 18, I started giving my shot at writing songs. Not the best songs, but, you know, it was just something I practiced and worked on. And so pretty much since I was 18, I've been writing songs and just trying to, you know, just whatever inspires me, I guess, to put into words or put into a song for people. But that was about the time. And actually, on our record, Ghosts Like Me, the song Fighting Fires, that was probably one of the first songs I ever wrote. And, you know, I think as confidence built and, you know, I would play those songs live, you know, people would, you know, be like, oh, I really, you know, connected with that song, or like, so that kind of encouraged me to write more.
Yeah. Now, how much of that song had changed over the years from the time you wrote it to the time you actually recorded it?
Not a whole lot. So my guitar player, Ryan, he's really good with working on the instrumental parts of it, just like strengthening the song rather. So like some of the verses were a little wordy, so we cut it back to flow better. So most of that song is pretty true to how it was, except for maybe 3 or 4 lines.
Oh, wow. That's pretty great. You know, to have a song, you know, kind of really out of the gate, right, that you haven't had to change too much and still be a great song.
Yeah, which that song was actually my dad, just retired. He was a Cranston firefighter. And I always tell people when I was a kid, my life was, he would work a night shift. So my mom would drop me off at the station when she was going to work in the morning, and he would be getting off work and he'd bring me to school, or vice versa. Like, he'd bring me to the station after school and I'd go home with my mom. And so like, I got a good idea of what it was like being a firefighter and, like, you know, the atmosphere and those stations. So I always feel like I had to write a song about that. So I think mainly because that song was very personal for me. And that kind of, I think just keeping the personal aspect of it, you know.
Yeah.
It never felt like something I needed to change, but just to change a few lines that would just make it easier to sing, or like wouldn't complicate the song too much.
Yeah. Now, so when you write your songs, right, where are you pulling your ideas from? Are you going more of the old school, what I would call the, you know, when country music was real? Or are you pulling from, you know, kind of stuff that's out now that's popular? Like, what's really driving you to, you know, write these songs?
Kind of a mix of the old and new. Obviously, yeah. I'll stick to a lot of the new stuff. I mean, a lot of the old stuff. And then there's some new artists that aren't too well known, just from what I've seen. Like, you probably have heard of, like, Zach Bryan. Charles Wesley Godwin. People that write, like, the songs they write, I feel like I'll listen to it, I'm like, I gotta write a song right now. Just being inspired by kind of just how packed those songs are with just like storytelling and how like just specific they are. So just like more of the storytelling aspects, I've tried to find some of my own writing. And again, going back to Bruce Springsteen, like the stories he tells in his songs, just, you know, those always blow me away. So I'm always trying to see how I can fit that in.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny you say that, because, you know, with the storytelling is, you know, with doing this, you know, I hear and see a lot of artists, and I see a lot of the independent folks, you know, really going towards that storytelling again, which is great, you know, because it's going to force the hand of, you know, the radio stations and all that to play these things, because that's what's going to be there.
Right.
Do you find it, you know, easy, difficult, based on, you know, where you're playing, to, you know, push your stuff a little bit harder based on the way you write your song?
Yes and no. So like the songs that are already out, you know, we'll play those every time. I think when I have the band, it's easier to be like, here's a new song I'm going to test on you guys, just because we have the volume, and not that people are forced to listen, but you'll hear it better. So that, I try to stick with up-tempo stuff if I'm trying a new song out, just to keep the mood light. If I can tell that the crowd is into it and they're really paying attention, I'll throw in some of my original stuff. And again, like I said, the ones that are already out into the world that people may know, we'll definitely play those.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, when you're playing, are you playing, you know, how long are your shows? Are you doing a mixture of, you know, is it like, you know, an hour set for 3 hours and with breaks in between? Are you playing, you know, some covers, mostly originals? Like, what's going on there?
It's a pretty healthy mix of both. You know, we'll do covers and we'll do originals. We do, I think our average is probably a 3 hour show with a 20 minute break in the middle. And again, that just depends. Like if people are really into it, we might not take a break just because we don't want to lose the energy that's going on.
Right.
So we read off the crowd, see how they're feeling. But for the sake of my hands and my voice, we try to take a break. But we typically open the show with Folsom Prison Blues, and then we go right into one of our songs, and that's been our opener probably for about almost 2 years now. But we definitely mix in the originals and the covers.
No, that's great, you know, because a lot of places, you know, want a lot of that, right? You know, they want the covers, they want the originals, you know, and your fan base wants that too.
Oh yeah, it's cool to see. Like I remember we played the North Stonington Fair this past summer, and this lady came up and she had seen us somewhere and she requested one of our songs. I didn't know who she was, and she looked at the CD and was reading off the track list, and she's like, oh, can you play Live with the Blues, which is a super slow ballad. And I was like, absolutely. Like, just cool that, you know, people know us, know our music, and, you know, they like it enough to request it while we're playing.
Yeah. So for the songs that people request, what has been the biggest surprise for you, like, so far?
Just in terms of the songs they request?
Yeah.
I gotta think about that. We probably our song The Picture of Henry Prescott, which I wrote about, just a story I made up. I was in Kansas for a music festival I was playing at, and there was this weird picture in the Airbnb we were staying at, so I was like, I gotta write a song about that creepy looking picture. And so I wrote that song just almost as a joke one day, and we started playing that. First time I played it, people were like, oh, you gotta play that song all the time. So people always request that one. And then there's some other ones that haven't been released yet that we play live. The song I have called Kingston Station Blues, which is about the train station in Kingston. That's not released, but people know it and they request that one all the time.
That's awesome. That's awesome. How does that feel as a singer, songwriter, artist, when you have, you know, songs that haven't been released to the general public, but, you know, you play live and you play out and somebody says, hey, can you play this song? What does that feel like? What does that feel like to you?
I think it's just reassuring that we're doing something right in a way.
Yeah.
And I think it just makes me want to go back into the studio and put that song out. But
definitely
it feels great just to, you know, because I think that's the goal. Obviously I'll always play covers, but just it's cool that people want to hear our stuff. And I think, you know, that definitely separates you in a way from other bands playing. And it's just reassuring that I think we're doing the right thing right now.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think you are, you know, and I've looked into what you've done and what you're doing. And, you know, you won a pretty big, you know, I would call it a battle of the bands, but, you know, a big kind of thing at Mohegan, right?
Yes. So that was a battle of bands called Locals Live. And I, at the time, was at 2018. I had sworn off of those kind of contests just because you do so many of them and, you know, you play well and it doesn't go your way. And some band wins, like, I don't know if they should have won. And a couple fans of mine came up to me at a show and like, hey, the Wolf Den is doing a Locals Live. And you should sign up. So I just, for the heck of it, sent in a video. I just got in the band. It was an acoustic band at the time. It was me, Ryan, and Olivia, the fiddle player and guitar player. And so I was like, hey, I entered this in, you know. And so that was set up. It was two rounds, probably over 100 bands had entered. And then they had 4 weeks of bands playing every Wednesday through November. And so you had to win a fan vote. And then if you won that round, you went on to the final round. You had to do it all over again. And that was something, I think, where the originals mattered. I almost say had an advantage, but I was working with WCTY at the time for an internship, and they were hosting it. So they were giving me this information like, oh, you know, they like original music, the judges. So I think we had that to our advantage. That we did half covers, half originals. And I still can't believe we won. We talk about that show all the time. That money funded our first album. So
can't complain. Oh, that's awesome. That's great. You know, and that's always the bonus, right? Is when you win something like that where it could, you know, help push you to whatever the next thing is.
Right.
So that's a perfect segue right into talking about your debut with Ghost Like Me. So what was the process for you guys to get that out? What was it? How did it start? How long did it take? You know, what's been everything up to it since then?
It was, so we won that money in December, and then I was like, it felt like the time to record something, just rather than being like, here's my YouTube channel, you know, just be like, we have an album, check it out if you want to book us. And so that was always in the back of my mind. When we got the money, I was like, all right, we can definitely do this. And I grabbed my drummer now, Ethan, and our bass player, Jared. And we hadn't really played together besides rehearsing with each other separately to make sure the songs were, you know, good to go. So we recorded it at Lake West Studio. It's in West Greenwich, Rhode Island. next to one of my favorite places in the world called the Mishnog Barn. It's a line dancing club. And we were there. Jack Gothier, he produced and engineered it. He does a lot of blues records and folk albums. And so we were there 2019. We started recording in June. And we went through mixing, up till mixing. That was, I think, December of that year, January. We finished the album and had it good to go. So it was a long process, and it was, you question your whole life if this sounds good enough. We recut a bunch of songs. So we were there probably once a month, I think.
Yeah.
So that was, scheduling was the hardest part, getting all the boys in there and Olivia at the time as well to sing with us. But, it definitely, I like how it came out, for sure. And, the tough part was we were getting ready to release it and the whole world shut down. So we had a whole CD release party planned. We couldn't do that. So then everyone's in their house and I was like, I don't want to sit on this album anymore. So we just kind of put it out just to give people something to listen to while they're stuck in their houses. And so it didn't get the buzz that I wanted it to immediately. Feels like more this year it has, I think, just because everything's open and we can, you know, promote it at shows, and it seems like the word's getting out a little bit more. So it took longer to get the word out than I had expected it to, but
yeah,
you know, it's been a good ride with it so far. So, you know, I think we'll keep pushing it a little bit more before we can go back in and do another one.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's great because now, you know, it's been out for a little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, having the time in between with, you know, shutdowns and COVID and all that crap that has come with it. You know, did you feel like once you started playing these songs live again, like they were new songs?
Oh, definitely. Because we had played before everything shut down, we played at Foxwoods for an after party. Rascal Flatts was in town, and our dressing room was across from theirs, which was wild. And we played there. Everything shut down. We hadn't played a show from March till November, I think, was our first show back in a club. And trying to figure out how these songs went. I think we just played the whole album that night. I was like, we haven't played this in so long, so we just it definitely felt new. I don't think I forgot too many words, but it was it just felt brand new again.
That's awesome. That's so cool. Now, do you have songs ready to go for something else, or are you just kind of riding this wave a little bit?
Probably both. Still, yeah. Definitely riding the wave to, you know, get people aware of the album still, but, you know, I probably have 3 or 4 songs that I would be ready to put on a new album, but I don't know the exact direction it's going to go in yet. So I'm still writing new songs and seeing what would fit for another album. Like, we have a good idea of where musically, where we want it to go.
Yeah.
So we're just prepping that a little bit as best we can, and just still marketing the new one. Yeah. The first one.
Yeah. Now, I like to ask everybody, you know, what has kept you here locally and not, you know, made your way to Nashville or Texas or, you know, anywhere that there's a, you know, a bigger music scene where you may or have a better chance of getting noticed?
Yeah. That's definitely a mental battle I have every day. When I was in high school, the plan was go to college, move right to Tennessee, and start doing music. That was my plan. And then as I started listening on the radio more, I didn't relate to those songs as much. And I discovered sometime in college, I discovered Cody Jinks and Sturgill Simpson and Jason Isbell and all those guys. And Tyler Childers had just come out, and you could see, like, just following them from an early start for them, I could see where they like how they rose to their popularity. And it was just through fan bases, really, is what it seemed like. And so I think staying up here, just because we're just growing the fan base a whole lot more. And I don't know if I would get lost in a big scene like Texas or Nashville right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think just, again, networking with artists locally, Backroads, that band, and Nick Bossy from Connecticut, like we've just been doing that kind of show for now, playing with them and just helping each other out fan base wise. And it just seems like word of mouth through that way has been most successful.
Yeah.
A thing that we do that I don't know how many people do this is we've been trying more to play in different states. So 2019, forced me to get a band together. We got booked in Indiana. And so we just take the show to different clubs, just to, again, word of mouth, just trying to the analogy is kind of starting building a circle around your home base and then just making it bigger going across different states. So that's the approach I've been taking now. I don't, you know, the idea of moving to Texas or Nashville is always on my mind. So it could happen. But for now, I think just, you know, waiting for all this crap to blow over with the pandemic. Once that's really seems like it's good, you know, I might plan my attack differently, but that's what you've been doing for now.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you got to gauge everything, right? And see where everything fits and what's going on and how everything is doing. You know, and if it doesn't make sense for you career wise, why even bother?
Right.
You know, so I got a few more things for you before we go our separate ways here. Now, when you're playing out and making these connections and doing your thing, do you find it easier to collaborate with other local artists to do things?
Definitely. So the funny story, if you get Nick Bossy on here, I highly recommend him. We did not like each other for a long time for no real reason. Besides the fact that our names are similar and we play the same music.
Yeah.
We played each other's bars. So we had, it wasn't even a rivalry, but, we just didn't like each other. I told him the exact story. It was, he was playing at a place called the Ratskeller during, the pandemic last August, and everyone I knew was going to this show. And I was just so mad that he was playing a band show and I hadn't played with my band yet all year. And so I decided from that day, like, I don't like him. And then I finally, you know, the ego went away and I messaged him and we became best buds about immediately. And so between him playing shows with him and then we linked up with Jesse the Source and Backroads. We've been doing some local festivals with them that, you know, produce these great crowds and just, I think, gets the word out even more. So definitely playing with local artists, I think, is the move. I would always say, like, to folks that are just starting, I'm like, definitely network with artists in your area just to build each other up, but make sure you're like, it seems like it'd be worth your time. Like, not necessarily waste your time with some artists, but, you know, make sure that they fit your mold as well. And I think, you know, Nick and I have been playing a lot more shows together. And we just played one on Saturday that was, it was in Woods Tavern in West Grange that sold out and it was just packed for the whole night. So definitely playing with locals has seemed to help a lot.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned Jesse and Backroads and stuff, because, you know, that's kind of how that's the connection here between you and I. Because a friend of mine that I've known for, you know, a couple of years now, Michaela Rivers, she was the one that was like, you need to get Nick on the show. And I was like, all right. Like, and at that time, like, it was, you know, I was clawing for people, you know, and I checked you out and I was like, damn, like this kid's got it, you know? And, you know, and even, you know, I didn't discover, but I I learned about Lauren King and what she was doing, and, you know, her and Jesse's version of, you know, we were vampires kind of came across, and it was like, damn, there's like a whole scene in Rhode Island that is almost untapped with a lot of great players.
Yeah. It's, I try to explain that to outsiders. Like, I have friends and, you know, people I try to network in Kentucky, and that, I know that area is huge right now, West Virginia, Kentucky. I'm like, hey, you know, there is something happening up north, and like, I don't want people obviously to miss it, but I'm like, you know, don't sleep on us for sure.
Yeah.
Michaela Rivers, she's awesome. Her voice is unbelievable. And we just met all at a big jam session one time, and I think it was last January or February. We just went up to Jesse's apartment, her and Michaela there, and we played every song we could think of from like 7 p.m. to 2 a.m.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But yeah, even I think I found, again, Lauren King through you and through Jesse, and, you know, she's awesome. It's just, it's cool to see, you know, this, whatever is happening, you know, happen the way it is. And, you know, nothing but respect and love for all those folks. Like Jesse the Source, I love playing with him because he has this great banter on stage. You know, he made this joke. We played a festival around October, and he said something. He was opening the show, and he goes, if you hadn't heard of Nick Casey yet, you're going to wish you would have. And I was like, that made no sense at all. He's just a great guy. They're all great.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I've been back and forth with Jesse a bunch, and hopefully sooner rather than later we'll get him. But, you know, I get he's busy, and, you know, he's got a whole different world going on. So, but yeah, you know, it's crazy how exactly what you said. Like, there's a whole thing going on up here that I think the rest of the country just doesn't get or doesn't understand or doesn't expect.
Right. I think because it's New England, you wouldn't think country music up here.
Right.
But I mean, to be here, obviously I wouldn't expect anything less but country music. But yeah, I always said, like, when I was a kid, you know, I'm still involved with the Harbor Agency. They, you know, help us book some shows throughout. We play in Maine a bunch, New Hampshire, and like all the artists that were in there. I know, you know, Annie Broops and all them. Like, I always felt like, I'm like, it's bound to happen that New England is going to have its time.
Right.
Like, and that's kind of how it works. Like, back in the day, it was Atlanta, Georgia, or just Georgia in general. Thomas Rhett, Jason Aldean, Luke Bryan, all those guys had their moment. Anyone who came out there. Right now, I think it's Kentucky, West Virginia, but it's only a matter of time before everyone comes up to New England and see what's going on.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we have some great, great country music venues in this region that, you know, really could blow up at any moment.
Yeah. You know, I've never played Loretta's. That's a dream venue. We'll get there eventually. But just the places that I play, like, but they're easily could become just as iconic as any other venue across the country. I know we play the Phoenix in North Stonington, or Pawcatuck, Connecticut, rather, pretty regularly. And that's a great spot for music.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think about it, you know, and especially in Rhode Island, like, there's some really good, and I say this with all the love in my heart, but, you know, some really good dive bars that have had great musicians come through, and unless you're a local, you have no idea what's going on.
Yeah. Before COVID, we used to play this dive bar, single room, one long bar room. It's called the Polish American Club. And that was some of our craziest shows were right in that small room. So,
yeah.
And we do Stanzi's Country Ranch up there in Peabody. And that's always a blast. Where else, you know, slowly but surely I'm finding a lot of newer venues that I haven't been to, but, like, again, they're all great spots for music.
Yeah. Have you ever played Katie's?
No, I haven't tried to get in there in a while, and I'm sure that'll happen as well, but I've heard that's a great spot.
Yeah. Katie's is another one of those, like, you know, I used to actually go in there every Friday night, and you know, the it's so small and so, you know, not smoky in a way of like people are smoking, but smoky in that, you know, exactly what you would expect it to be.
Right.
It's got a, you know, if it was in a movie, it would be a character all of its own.
Yeah.
And, you know, the people that are in there, they love country music and the blues and, you know, everything that is that. And I think that would be a great spot for you to get into and play on a Saturday night when they do their music and stuff.
I'll have to check it out. There's a new place I just started, Stone Cow Brewery in Barre, Mass., which I didn't know where Barre, Massachusetts was until I booked the show. And that's an amazing venue that, you know, I recommend anyone checking out. It's just a big bar room turned into a brewery, and the people there really like music. So,
yeah. Yeah. And those are always the best places, and that's where you always have the most fun.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I think I learned that a lot. You know, being the tough part I've always said about playing in Rhode Island, New England, like to a degree, I think non-music enthusiasts take for granted how many live music spots we have.
Yeah.
Because when we were in Indiana, we played at this bar, this club called Duke's Indie, which is an amazing, amazing place for a show. And like just people, they don't have that many live venues for that kind of stuff for like up and coming artists. So like, it's a different world out there. People are just sitting and watching the whole 3 hours. So
yeah. Now, other than Loretta's, do you have any other, like, you know, I guess you could say dream venues up here that you haven't played that you want to, that are on the short list of this is where I want to go?
Locally, I would love to play the Rathskeller. I've been trying to get in there for years. Loretta's would be cool. I'd have to scope out what's on my list of places to contact. Locally, Loretta's is probably number one right now, but for me, for a long time, it was the Washington County Fair, because that's my hometown fair.
Yeah.
And we got to play there, fortunately, a few years ago. We opened for Hardy, and I was like, well, that was my dream venue. I gotta pick something else now, but
And like to open for somebody like Hardy, you know, that's not a name or anything now. So that's interesting.
Yeah, that was cool. I didn't really get to hang with him. He didn't come out of his bus at all or his dressing room. But it's funny now because a lot of my friends from home I met after that show, and I casually brought it up, and they're like, "You're the guy that opened for Hardy." I was like, "Yeah, that was me." So that was, you know, that was cool. And I think we'll be back there again.
That's awesome.
Forever. But that is probably has always been number one. And, you know, I'll always play the Washington County Fair when we get the chance.
Yeah, absolutely. So my last few things here, because I like to ask everybody, and if you've ever listened to any of these episodes, you know it's coming. Two questions. One, if you're a bourbon or whiskey drinker, what is your bourbon or whiskey of choice? And two, if you wear boots, what boots are you wearing?
I'll start with boots. My go-to boot is Dan Post. I've had the same. I have many pairs now, but my first pair I got when I was in high school, I still wear at any big show we play, and they're just super comfortable. So if you need some boots, I recommend Dan Post. Whiskey, I don't drink too much, so that might be a little bit of a letdown. I guess like Sons of Liberty is a big one. They're in Wakefield, Rhode Island. They're a local company, and
I've actually never heard of them, so that's, I like that.
Highly recommend. They're pretty good. You know, really really strong stuff for someone who doesn't drink. But like, you know, I guess if someone wanted to buy me a shot while I'm playing, it's probably just Jack Daniels. Nothing out of the nothing too wild.
nothing dangerous there. No,
right. I can still function for the next couple hours while I'm singing.
Yeah. Well, that's cool, man. Well, I really appreciate your time, and I appreciate you coming on and talking to me about, you know, you and where you've come from and how you've gotten to where you are. You know, it's been really interesting to hear, you know, especially from a local person. You know, I have a not even though I've never lived in Rhode Island, you know, I have a soft spot in my heart for everything that is Rhode Island because of growing up here. So I thank you so much for your time and hope to hear from you again and see you super soon.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me. I'm down to do this again whenever it works out. But I was looking forward to this for a while. So
good. Yeah, I was too. And you know, I know we've talked about it, but you got to get yourself. I know Rhode Island's little, and from where I live to where you live is only, you know, 50 minutes at best. But you know, I gotta get you up here, closer to here.
Where are you located exactly? We're sneaking up slowly up in the Mass.
So I am in Millville, which is right on the North Smithfield line.
All right.
So I'm in that ballpark.
We'll be we do Coach's Deli and Pub. That's in Smithfield.
Okay.
We'll be there. That dive bar, the Polish Club I was telling you about, that's in Uxbridge, Mass. So
Once we're
in there again, I'll definitely let you know.
Yeah, because that's for me. I could have, you know, enough to feel good and drive home blindfolded and know how to get home. not that I'm right. Do that.
But we don't encourage that, but
no, absolutely if not. If needed, it's literally down the street. Oh, that's well. I'm glad that you do that because that would be awesome. That would be so awesome.
Yeah, I definitely, I love solo shows, but like I said, I definitely recommend a band show.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty rowdy, so.
I mean, even to drive down your way in, you know, Connecticut or whatever isn't awful, right? But it's also, you know, there's a lot of logistics when you have three kids and trying to figure all that shit out.
Yeah, absolutely. I believe that.
You know? So, yeah, but I can't, you know, I really can't wait to see you. And see you live with the band or even by yourself. And, you know, cause this has been a lot of fun and it's been great getting to know you even, you know, off the air. So I appreciate all that a lot. I really do.
Yeah. Again, like I said, I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. Well, until next time, Nick, you know, I hope you enjoy your holidays and your Christmas or whatever you're doing. And, we'll talk super soon.
You as well, my friend. Good talking to you.
Thanks. See ya.
Well, there you have it, everyone. Nick Casey, what a conversation. What an event. What a way to end this series of special episodes. To my previous guests of these special episodes, Ricky Duran, Savannah Ray, Liam Coleman, and of course, Nick Casey, thank you all so much from the bottom of my heart for being a part of this show. Being a part of this in-between seasons, I can't thank you enough. I thought it was really important that we keep releasing episodes, even if they weren't part of a season. Season 2, just so you know, or just to remind you, will start February 1st, next Tuesday. We will also probably run that season into April. We'll probably do another set of these in May. And then start season 3. We'll see how things go. Don't hold me to any of that. By the time season 1 will start on Tuesday the 1st, we will already have had a month's worth of episodes ready to go for you. We're going to do weekly episodes this time. We're not going to give you a ton of stuff at once unless there is a concert review thrown in there. We will release those. We're also going to start doing the whiskey reviews as promised. So please stay tuned for that. I have some things I'm working on with some brands, some other brands that I get chills. I'm getting chills just talking about it and thinking about what's happening in 22. Thank you for your support. Hopefully you keep listening. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Going to be launching a new website as well. So stay tuned for that. A lot of things coming. So until next time, until next week in season 2 when we see you, keep the boots on the ground and the whiskey in the glass. Cheers, everyone. Good night.